Let's talk to Walker Ashley, the meteorologist at Northern Illinois University. Obviously, I want to talk a little bit about hurricane season again. Hey, Walker, thanks for jumping on with us again. I'll take 5 minutes of your time. How are you today, sir?
Doing well.
So here we go again. This is the third conversation you and I have had and the third monster hurricane, right?
Yeah, it's like Bill Murray and Groundhog Day, huh?
Yeah, about that. This one, though, while it hits Puerto Rico, then kind of bounces off, and we're not going to have to worry about this one anymore, right?
Well, I don't want to throw it out to sea quite yet. It's not a 0% chance it won't affect the United States, at least the lower 48. Recall that the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico are territories of the United States, so we can't forget that fact. But it does look, at least the forecast track is right now, to hang off just the east coast of the United States. We'll have rip currents and unfortunately, probably some coastal flooding associated with it. Wow. But it's going to be a fairly close call, so we need to pay attention to it.
Warmer oceans make stronger hurricanes. Is that the moral of these stories again?
Well, I mean, these are the basic ingredients that we need for hurricanes. The Atlantic has been a heck of an incubator this year, and you definitely need warm sea surface temperatures. And the bath water in the Caribbean, Eastern Caribbean, has been upper 80s to near 90. And so that is a primary condition for hurricanes, but also a lack of change in wind direction with height, or what we call wind shear, is a necessity for the sustenance of these storms. So we found those conditions quite prevalent across the western Atlantic this year.
So do we have a sort of perfect storm, the upper air currents and the warm temperatures to generate these super hurricanes?
Right. Usually we're missing one of the critical ingredients, whether there's just too much wind shear or the sea surface temperatures are just too chilly. In this particular last month, really, since the mid to latter part of August, of course, going back to Harvey, the environment has just been very conducive to these high-end tropical storms.
Last year, we didn't have a bunch of super hurricanes. We've kind of missed. It hasn't been this bad for the last few years, though, right?
Yeah, we've been relatively lucky, and so again, we're missing one of the critical ingredients. Maybe we didn't have enough disturbances coming off of Africa, which are typically the seedlings for these hurricane events, or maybe even factors such as the amount of dust that comes off of Africa can directly influence hurricane formation. And last year in particular, we had a lot of dry air in the Atlantic Basin in the mid-levels of the atmosphere, and that is not conducive to hurricane development.
Do you have any advice for those of us who find ourselves getting into climate change arguments with our friends on how to use these three hurricanes?
Well, we have to be cautious with that, right? I wish that we would get a little bit more argumentative regarding some of the policies that we have out there, building and subsidizing development
right.
In areas maybe where a little risky. But it's good to have these discussions. It's healthy. I would invite people to become informed. Just don't listen to Uncle Bob or even Brother John. Become informed and read science. And there's plenty of avenues out there to receive some of that information.
And however you come to, for whatever reason, for whatever conclusion you come to,
that's the truth.
The reason that you and I first spoke was that if you're the mayor of a city near a body of water on the ocean on the East Coast, you need to start paying attention to infrastructure and stuff like that, right?
Oh, yeah. You should have been thinking about that during the mayoral race. It is, coastlines all across the globe are going to be dealing with the sea level rise, and we've seen about three and a half inches since the mid-1990s. That's supposed to accelerate throughout the 21st century, and some of the projections are for up to 4 feet of sea level rise. And so you think of Miami, Charleston, Houston, New York City, and on and on and on. We're going to have to really think about policy and using technology for our advantage.
Nice to talk to you, Walker. I'll call you again another day. We always appreciate your time and expertise, sir.
Thanks, John.
Walker Ashley's at Northern Illinois University, a professor there, a meteorologist. One of his colleagues, Paul Stoddard, is an earthquake expert. I've got a couple questions for him. Like, what are the chances? Is there something to the fact that you have, these gigantic earthquakes on the same day, 1 year apart, and two around an 8-point-something within several days of each other? And what does this say to California? He'll answer those questions in a minute. Paul Stoddard's on a phone line, another one of the smart people over at Northern Illinois University, an expert on geology and earthquakes. Hey, Paul, it's John Williams. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I got like three simple questions for you, and you get about 3 minutes to answer them. You ready?
All right.
What about the coincidence of a super-duper earthquake on the same day? Is there something to the date, or is that just a 1 in 365 chance?
Well, maybe it's a 1 in 90 chance, but there is some evidence to suggest that there's a certain seasonality to earthquakes. Rainy seasons might see more of them, but as for the specific day itself, yeah, that's pure coincidence.
So does a couple of really severe earthquakes, though, because we had that other one that was off the coast of Mexico, right, that was an 8-point something?
Yeah, that was about an 8.0 in 1985. It did an awful lot of damage. It really devastated a lot of buildings. It killed a lot of people, unfortunately. Both of these are related to subduction of the Cocos Plate under Mexico. So subduction zones are really prime areas for getting large earthquakes. And so both of these are related to that type of activity.
Did they know this one was? Did they know this was coming? Don't they have sensors that say the pressure's really high here? Did they see this one coming?
Unfortunately, earthquake prediction is not yet very good. So we know that areas are prone to have earthquakes. That allows for better building codes to minimize the damage and death that happens during an earthquake. But in terms of predicting one so that you could evacuate a city or do something like that, we're still pretty far away from being able to achieve that. It seems like every region is a little different, and having a big earthquake can actually change the circumstances so that even if you figured out what was happening with that first earthquake, the earthquake itself might have changed things enough so that you couldn't figure out
right
from that what to do with the next one.
Is it possible that, though, that since the Earth has relieved all that pressure with this big earthquake in Mexico, that they're sort of off the hook for a while? Or is it possible this is just a precursor of things to come?
Either of those is possible. Huh. Unfortunately, we don't have a very good way to figure out which is right. So, yeah, it could have relieved a lot of pressure. It could have, by slipping where it did, might be putting more pressure on neighboring areas. So maybe it will be the precursor to a bigger event in the next few days or weeks. There's really no way to tell. Generally, an earthquake this large is the big event, but sometimes it is what we call a foreshock to an even bigger one.
You could have a 7 or 8.0 foreshock?
Yeah, you could.
What does this tell the people in California? Is what happens in Mexico in any way related to San Francisco?
Only in a very gross general sense. In terms of any predictions they might be making or any alerts or anything like that in San Francisco, really no relationship whatsoever.
Your colleague a moment ago was on our show, Walker Ashley, the meteorologist, and he did say something to us a couple of weeks ago that places like Miami are just sitting ducks, that eventually, you know, the Category 4 or 5 hurricane is going to hit, and they will suffer the consequences. Do you feel
right.
the same way, though, about earthquakes in Southern California or Northern California?
Absolutely. We know they happen there. We know why they happen there. We know they will happen there again. So, yeah, it is just a matter of time. But fortunately, because we do know that, like I said, we can, you know, build buildings to tighter construction codes. We have a pretty good idea of the nature of motion that a building undergoes during an earthquake. And we can design buildings, and they're very clever out in California about doing this, buildings on giant shock absorbers, on wheels,
yeah.
And so forth to minimize the amount of shaking that takes place.
I'm out of time. I suppose I'll be calling you again. Thanks for your help this afternoon, Paul, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
All right, my pleasure.
Paul Stoddard is a professor of geology and expert on earthquakes at